Hello, and welcome to episode 227 of the Awesome Comics Podcast. The place where the small... Hang on, is it 227?
Yes. You're asking me.
Keep going.
Hang on, no, that's I'm good. Not going to keep going. Hang on, I want to make sure... I just want to double check. I typed it in the script, but...
227.
It is 227.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Sorry, gents.
Correct.
No, all right.
Hello and welcome to episode 227 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Cheap Better Butcher.
Hello.
And the powerhouse known as Mr. Tony Esmond.
Oh, sorry, I was just shagging birds.
I think because this is post-Thought Bubble, isn't it? So...
That's what we did at Thought Bubble, wasn't it? Class A's. And I had a pizza. We haven't been there yet, so I don't know.
There's probably only one bit of that statement that's true, and that's Tony had a pizza. Yeah.
We had a pizza.
Okay. Yeah. Do you even like pizza? You like pizza, don't you?
Yeah, I'll eat a pizza. I'll have a pizza with you. That's very nice of you to offer. Thank you. Go on then, you pay.
That was nice of you, Vince.
Well, you know, I can honestly say it was my pleasure because it hasn't happened yet and it probably won't. So, but people think that I have actually paid. Yes, hello, folks. Welcome to another Three Amigos show. Thank you to all our guests recently. We've had some pretty funny shows recently that have also been informative. So, thank you.
Combine both. It's not, you know, mutually exclusive. It's quite good.
Yeah. Our shows are kind of like, ha, 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 learn, ha, ha.
Feel a bit sick.
And then you just want to...
Sometimes there's like quite big tonal shifts, like from we're fucking about, and then it goes serious, and then quite quickly it goes fucking...
I think we get a bit impatient, don't we? We have to say boobs or something, because we get a bit impatient and serious.
That's just you, Tony. But yes, it's just us three this week, and as we're recording this early, but obviously this is out. Thought Bubble has just happened, so you might be listening to this on your way back from Thought Bubble, or perhaps you're just recovering from a fantastic convention weekend. Are there any more later this year? Is that the
BAM? We've got BAM, haven't we?
Yeah, BAM's happening in December. More news on that later.
I'm going to an illustration fair.
Nice.
End of November. Yeah, got a bit of one of them going on.
Yeah. So now the convention season is winding down.
Drawing to a close.
Yeah. And now everyone's got to think about what they're going to do next year. And probably already book up for next year.
Start the cycle again.
Yeah.
I've already got the guilt of not getting to all the books I've been sent to review in time.
So it's just us three, and we thought, we've read a lot of great books recently. Some we've been meaning to talk about, some that we haven't had a chance to sort of talk about. So this week we're just gonna... There's not a recommendation section at the end of the show. It's just happening in the show. That will be the meat of this episode. But do you know where else you can find meat?
In between your buns on the weekend.
Daniel Butcher.
Sorry, it's Comic House
barbecue.
it's a delicious barbecue of comics that you can find at Comic House, who are our sponsor every week. Yes, they're indie comic marketplace.
It's a delicious barbecue of comics.
Yeah,
that works all right.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, that's right. That should be on a t-shirt. I won't get any royalties, but such is life. There's a huge selection of titles on the Comic House database, and lots of creators, they host, they put their books up on there, and you can start selling like printed issues of your books on comichouse.com straight away for free and start selling. But the major thing that everyone should check out is the app, the Comic House app. If you've got a digital book and you want to get it into the eyes of more readers, creators, etc., then the app is definitely the way to go. It's like Netflix for comics. Only costs £3 a month, with a 14-day free trial as well, and you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. I mean, our stuff is on there. A lot of our past guest stuff is on there. Dan, what have you got? Any notable ones you can think of?
Well, my review tonight is going to be from the app.
Oh, yes. It's a title that has been mentioned pretty much every time we've done a Comic Cast.
Pretty much every week, yeah.
So looking forward to that. Yes, there's loads of stuff on there. If you go to comiccast.com, you can find out more about it and for a 14-day free trial. Yeah, we love them, and they put up with us. So, you know, what more can you say about that?
10 out of 10.
That's how sponsorship ads work, isn't it?
Pretty much. Yeah.
But,
Yeah.
There was no, it was strange. Every time I start a Comic House ad, I think something bad is going to happen, and when it doesn't, I'm a bit unnerved.
Relieved,
a bit scared.
Yeah.
But I always am before I record every show.
Yeah.
But yes, before we get into talking about some great indie comics and some, we got some fun stuff as well and some lovely stuff to read out. Tony, there was a bit of news as we spoke.
Yeah,
I mean, this news is probably just less than a week old.
Well, no, it's less than a couple of hours old.
Well, yeah, but they're not.
When people listen to this,
A lot of you may already know this, but for those who don't, Tony, do you just want to?
So, Orbital Comics is my local comic book shop. It's where I have my pull list. I have done for quite a few years. And it was announced, unfortunately, by that website that shall not be named, that the they are stopping getting monthly comics in. Now, they're not just stopping it soon. Today, as we record, is New Comic Book Day, Wednesday. That's started today. So if you were going in there today, you wouldn't get your new comic books.
So did they not announce this?
No, they haven't formally announced it. I rang the shop. Because I was thinking about going into town to collect my books, because obviously we're off to Thought Bubble the next couple of days, and I've got a busy day tomorrow. And I thought, I'll head in. I saw that, and I thought, oh. So I thought I'd check, and I rang in, and they know, no new comic books today. So I've had to do some shenanigans and get people to collect stuff from Forbidden Planet for me, and I've gone onto eBay to order a couple of other things. So it's quite a shock.
Yeah. Because when you sort of, you talked about it, you did mention weekly comics. And that threw me a little bit, because I just thought of, you know, your weekly releases, like the Phoenix and things like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, do they have a...
Everything off Diamond, essentially.
Yeah. That is shocking. Yeah. That's...
Did they give... Is there any kind of reason? I've not actually read the article.
I read the Bleeding Cool article. That was based on speculation and rumour, obviously, as every article they do is. But it'd appear to have some sort of grounding in the truth. And, well, not every article, I'm sure they do reveal stuff. But it is based on something that obviously has now happened.
Yeah.
And I rang the shop and I said, look, and I spoke to someone who I know very well there, and I said, is it true? And he says, yeah, don't come in because you won't have your comics. And I'm thinking, the first thing I thought was, well, how long have you guys known?
Yeah.
Because, as we all know, you have to pre-order from Diamond 3 months in advance.
So this has been coming then, presumably.
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether it's just a sudden thing and Diamond decided not to deal with them, or they've decided not to deal with Diamond somehow and there's a court case, whatever, you know, but... I don't know. So
it's hard to, if this is, it won't be a temporary thing, surely, because if this has happened, like, you can't walk this back and sort of say,
they're the only distributor of American comics, really, aren't they, Diamond, now, pretty much?
Yeah.
Apart from the likes of TK and a few others.
See, I can understand what they're saying about not trying to see it from their point of view, not telling people beforehand, because everyone would pull their pull lists immediately.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just trying to be devil's advocate here.
Yeah, no, I'll get you.
If they said that, they were like, well, fuck it, we cancel it immediately.
But the storm that they must be, or must have, or be weathering, there's nothing quite like a disgruntled comic.
Because if you turned up today and you're like, where's my pull list? And
well, people have been. It's been on Twitter and stuff. You know, people have done that. And I almost did it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a gut punch.
And the thing is, it may be your local, Tony, but for some people, it's their comic book store, but they have to travel a bit further.
Yeah, well, I'm an hour away, man. Yeah. You know, it's not close for me. I've just checked their Twitter again, and there's nothing so far again on there. I mean, they do have a mail out, which normally comes out on a Tuesday, and I can't remember whether I got or received it, to be fair, but they do have a list of people who are standing order customers, I would guess, who they could email.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Shock, it's very sad. I think. Yeah. You know.
Incredibly sad. They're the big. They're one of the big shops.
Yeah.
I mean, they're an Eisner award-winning shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously we don't know the whole. We can't talk to factual stuff yet.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time this comes out, we might know more. But
yeah.
You know, hypothetically, you know, what does this mean for a store like that? Do you think?
Well, the rumor that I hear is that they're moving to selling back issues and art books.
Okay.
Now, bearing in mind
and graphic novels and stuff like that, and books and things like that. I'm guessing.
Well, only for as long as their library exists until it sells out, because most of those, not all of them, some of them come from distributors like Turnaround and Bounce, but at the moment.
Yeah.
What
about the indie section though? Because it's got a nice indie section, doesn't it?
It has. Some of that still comes from Diamond. I mean, you can order No Brown Diamond. You can order, you know, people order Fantagraphics and, you know, Myriad. You name it, there you can order them on Diamond.
Mm.
But most of their stuff comes from Diamond, so that'll stop. So all the trades of Valiant, Marvel, DC, Vertigo, you know, all that, the Dark Horse, Image, all that will stop because that's coming from Diamond.
Yeah.
Unless they can source it somewhere else from a second, you know, tier source. So, but when you think about it, they occupy a substantial area of real estate in West End of London, which is like up, you know,
prime.
Absolutely, yeah. And can a shop survive just on back issues and art books? And you know, I don't know. I don't know what their overheads are, and I don't know anything really.
Yeah. Do they move? Towards being more of an independent bookshop kind of feel.
Do they move elsewhere? Do they move on to eBay mostly? You know, I mean, with Krypton Comics, for example, they exist mostly on eBay.
Used to work in that area near Shaftesbury Avenue for a number of years, and the amount of shops that stayed open for 6 months and then shut, because it must be absolutely punishing, like to generate the revenue for the rent.
But
presumably they've kind of costed and made this factor of sort of saying that this is not economically viable for us to do.
Yeah, well, it's got to be, isn't it?
Although we can talk about, oh no, you know, some people say, how could they do this? And you have the people that have their pull lists and the monthlies, and obviously that's just cut off. You know, that vein has run dry just so suddenly. But the flip side is, on the whole, how many people are buying these monthlies? How well are
that's
comics?
That's the issue, isn't it?
Nice pun.
What is the problem? Diamond or the quality of the comics or the price of the comics?
I think it's a combination of a few things there, dude. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the top tier comics in the country, in the world at the moment, on Comic-Con or something like that, and yes, okay, I understand that it's not exact figures, but it's certainly a very good indication of what's selling, what's not. Mm. The top 10 are selling as well as they always have.
Yeah,
but it's when you get to the mid-tier and stuff like that, and there's much more variety of comics now.
Yeah.
It spreads it a bit thin. And knowing what to order, do you order 5 of this Dynamite book or this Black Crown? I mean, Black Crown disappeared, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But it's a real shock to me. And it's like, because I'm away a lot. I travel around a bit. I'm reliant on having a pull list to get the books, because it's not like books are available all the time these days. If you don't get a book on a you know, Wednesday to Saturday, sometimes you won't get it at all.
No, sometimes you miss it, you won't get it.
Yeah. And so it's a good thing for me, the pull list, and it's reliable. And when you think, where will everyone go from there? Everyone will either go to the Forbidden Planet or Gosh, I would suggest.
Hmm.
Forbidden Planet, the shelves are ill. Well, they're not so much now that Zach works there, obviously, listener Zach, but they're much better maintained. But in the past, they have been a bit ropey, the treatment of the comics on the shelves there. So, you know, Gosh may be the preferred one of some people. But the Gosh certainly don't stock enough, I don't know, Avengers or House of X to cater to both shops. So what do they do? You know, it's a funny one. I'm a little bit upset because there's issues I wanted to get this week, and I've had to sort of reach out to people. Like, Aaron's gone to get me the new Grendel because that's come out, because he's walking through town. You know, I've gone to eBay to order, you know, the New Mutants issue that's coming out and stuff. You know, there's...
As a customer, you've kind of been left in the lurch a little bit there.
But I was never told.
That's what I mean. Like, to kind of, like, find it out for a secondary source.
They should have at least... That's the biggest issue. For me, that's the biggest issue.
They should have said something Monday morning Again, I don't know. Yeah,
when
I don't know what the
my
position
books
is.
Last week, that's when they should have told me.
Yeah, said just to let you know, for next week we're not getting him. I mean,
yeah, we won't be getting any more in, man. You might want to move to another shop, or what are you going to do? You know, I mean, I'm surprised that they don't just stick. They don't just keep the pull list books. But then again, if they're backing completely away from Diamond, they can't do that either, can they?
Yeah. Maybe they'll give an opportunity to kind of like stock more more independent titles, a small press and publishers that are not affiliated with Diamond. I don't know.
I mean, obviously,
I don't think you make a lot of money selling small press books.
Yeah, we fight the good fight for small press, but
of course, speaking from the point of view of an English creator, the way to go now is with English publishers. You know, No Brown, Myriad, and Avery Hill, and.
What about European? Oh, it depends. We've got fucking the B word looming over us.
Yeah.
If that goes through, fucking getting stuff from Europe's going to go up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, just homegrown titles like Vanguard. That's fine.
Yeah, Red Master Mars. Comics are, and we've always said it, they're too expensive. When you're paying £4 for 20 pages, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know the creator's got to pay, but it's never that simple. If there's an infrastructure built up with a load of hangers on and a load of nonsense about how much an issue should be, then if it's not working, it's not working. You've got to do something about it.
You can't argue with that kind of market force. Like, the market's speaking here that this is too much, or that whatever, the system's not working because it's come to this. Yeah. I mean, I feel like they need to kind of make. I don't know the whole picture, so it's all kind of guesswork, but. If the system's kind of like this and comic shops are broken and they're sort of shutting down and the whole system's not working, surely they've got to take a look and say, if you don't change and adapt, you will die.
Yeah. Like, I maintain a list of comic shops for my work. And as we've lost three or four very recently that, you know.
It's sad because they're trying hard. You know, a big shout out to all those people.
Yeah.
Especially the independents, because they're trying what they can. And for instance, they will suffer from, some people have huge pull lists and then don't come in to get them everywhere.
Yeah, that is bad behaviour. Yeah, that does really wind me up. And you see occasionally people will post a picture of them standing next to the big pile that comics that people haven't pulled them out, you know. Yeah.
See, I would change to a pre-ordering system, or trouble is with GDPR, you can't have those kind of things on detail. You'd have to, like cards on.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, so you'd have to have like a standing order or a direct debit that goes out, but it would change every week. So,
I mean, I'd be up for doing that. I probably drop £50 a week in Orbital. I would quite happily do that.
Fair enough. Or even like buy a load of credit.
Yeah,
so you have to kind of work up a credit.
It's a sad day, man. It's a great shop, and it's some really great people work there and have worked there over the years. And I have, it's a virtual second home to me. I'm in there a good few hours every week at least, you know. Yeah. I'm in contact with them all the time. I've got friends who work there, you know, friends who've left there and are still friends, you know, it's that sort of thing. And it's an absolute shame.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I hope they do find a way to survive. I really do.
Yeah.
I'll have to take my monthly comic business somewhere else. I'll probably still go in there and buy trades and stuff like that when I can. Mm-hmm.
Orbital have always been known for like doing events and stuff. They've done doing art events or like drawing or things like that. There's something always going on there.
Yeah. Well, it's weird, a week ago, the Saturday of MCM. So as we talk now, a week and a half ago, was the big the wake for Black Crown.
Yeah,
and apparently it was a really great party, but the staff know.
Yeah, it's an awkward one.
Yeah,
maybe they'll come out in the next.
Yeah, we'll find out. I think things will start to eke out. It's such a shame that it came out from Bleeding Cool, though. I can't stand that site, and it's not really my kind of site. But they should have stuck something out beforehand, especially on the day a new comic was.
Yeah, you've got to control the narrative on that, really, and kind of get it snatched away. Because if someone leaked it from the shop or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, I'm concerned. It's very sad, but like also, what else does this indicate of the comic book market?
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's a symptom of a problem.
Yeah, we've been... we've been dropping hints like occasionally throughout the year. Listeners, and our end of year show is going to be a very interesting one this year.
Yeah, it's been a weird year, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously, I think this is across the board, comic readers and comic fans and stuff. There's a lot to think about and contemplate, and especially comic creators as well. You know, how to go about things now, because, you know, it's a different landscape we're in.
Yeah. I was speaking to a publisher in New York, knowing that, you know, just someone I was chatting to on a table, and I was saying, you know, the part-time creator, and he says, it's here. He says, I said, that's where I'll go. It'll be people who have a day job, and then they'll make comics in the evenings. He says, it's here already.
Yeah.
Especially writers, he says.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, there was something, Ryan K. Lindsay. I think about every six episodes his name comes up, because we love him so much. But I know he's a teacher. He's a full-time teacher in Australia.
Yeah.
And he posted a tweet recently about, like, you know, I think, you know, just the health benefits or pensions or things like that. You know, you don't, because you're on a freelance basis, they don't really...
Yeah,
get,
you
know, none of that.
You can't... To go full-time in comics, you don't have that structure. So, whereas... Being a teacher, you know, he has those things. So he's always going to be a teacher that writes some awesome comics at the same time. You know, I think you're right. We live in that world where everyone's juggling so many different sort of things that they can do, aren't they, really?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's never forget it should be fun, though. So,
yes,
do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's always got to be fun. And this show's got to be fun. So, yeah, but from one story, we will. I mean, this show isn't a weekly avenue for news. This isn't, isn't whatever. But
it's just something, because it was such a big thing in the last few hours.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, God, no, really? And we thought we'd mention it.
The weeks progress, if we find out anything more from the relevant people, you know, so information you can trust and stuff, we'll say it on the show so you guys know about it if we find out more.
Yeah.
But from that story to, and we're only going to touch about it slightly, but there was a reason I called you that name at the beginning, wasn't there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, better. Yeah. We won't spend too much time on this because it's not a sour grapes kind of thing. But I think I posted up some stuff on Reddit just to kind of get some traction and, like, get people interested in Vanguard issue 16. And a chap commented and said, oh, do you mind if I do, like, a breakdown on it? And I was like, yeah, no probs. And that was about June, July. And only over the weekend I was sticking a graphic on the top of my YouTube page just to sort of, like, brand it, whatever. And his video came up in the Watch Next. And I was like, oh, okay, I haven't seen this before.
Okay.
So you weren't sent the link?
Maybe he did, and I've not seen it.
Okay.
I don't think I have, because, like I said, he asked in June. So yeah. I think he published the video. It was literally about 3 or 4 months ago. So I could have well just missed the link.
Yeah.
But he was kind of like, I can't remember the name of the video, but it's like an art breakdown, and he's done an art breakdown of the cover of issue 16 and several interior pages. And I was kind of watching it thinking, fuck, you know, he's going a bit heavier, isn't he? I was a bit like...
You were messaging us, and I could tell, even though it was just in text, you were a little shook up by it.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I've been on the kind of receiving end of, like, some harsh crits, but kind of like a crit is, you should be able to take away a lot, like, positive from it.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be like a fucking bashing, but that one was just like, Jesus Christ, dude. It was a bit full on. So he did make some relevant points, and I've sort of like thought, yeah, maybe I'll change that up and do things a bit differently. But
Did you post it in our group, or was it just on your Facebook?
I just posted it on my local Facebook group.
Yeah, and I remember when you posted it, you didn't post anything like, oh, check out this, he's laying into me.
No, not at all.
You were very sort of down the line, and you know, I haven't watched the video because I love Dan's work and I don't want to.
I felt slightly obliged for about a minute and started watching it, and it just bored me, so I turned it off, and I didn't want to hear anything bad about Dan. So
one of the things that kind of it's hard, maybe people who've got more critiquing experience have got this through, but he seemed to be putting a lot of personal things of what he liked into saying, you do this and I don't like that, so you shouldn't do it. I said, like, well, it's kind of subjective. Like, if some people would really like it, other people might not like it, but you've got to try and say what works and what doesn't. So
that's interesting, man. I was thinking about this today, because I wrote a review for something yesterday. You two guys know what it is.
Mm.
And I wrote it in two sections. I wrote whether it's good or not, and then I wrote a section on how I personally felt about it, because I'm old and jaded. And I deleted it because I didn't like it. And I thought the people shouldn't be interested in what I personally like. It's nothing to do with a review.
Yeah. Because I don't like the colour red, and you've used that extensively. So
yeah.
Well, it's irrelevant what you're sort
people
of...
say, I don't really like superhero stories, or I don't really like detective stories. And that's nothing to do with the review at all.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, maybe if you kind of, I'm always wary of reviews that say, I don't really like X material, but I'm going to review X material anyway. Don't you? It's like, well, you've already fucking shown your bias straight out of the gate, and you said, I'm going to give it a bad review. But
if anything, if there's a review that's like, I love superhero comics, but this comic, you know, the people that know superhero comics are the ones you want to be scared of.
So I kind of, it wasn't one of those ones. I didn't want people to kind of like brigade it and go onto his channel and leave comments and stuff. No one has, but people kind of like left comments, and they were sort of saying, no, don't listen. He makes a few valid points, but he's kind of off base on a number of issues. So, so there we go.
There were two things that happened when I read that feed that you sent. And the first one was
Dark Web Hitman.
I was pissed off because it just sounded harsh. I didn't watch any of it, but it just got my heckles up. And then two, I was so it warmed my heart, and I was so pleased with the response.
All
those lovely people sent you, and much like, you know, the community that follows this show or gets involved on the Facebook group and stuff, it's they always say things well.
I told you I was out for dinner with Aaron Rackley, and I'd seen the video, but I hadn't watched it. And he went, "Oh, have you seen it?" And I said, "No." He says, "He's totally off mark, man. He's like totally way off mark."
The kind of people mentioned in the comments is like, I was really, really kind of like, oh, great. At least I'm kind of, because I wasn't sure which way to take it. I didn't want, like I said, didn't want to be like, just getting my back up because someone's being negative about my work and thinking, was he on the level we're or what? I wasn't too sure. But
well, we're creative people, and everything we do, we're always going to have problems with. We're always going to be like fearful of these things. I mean, we're proud of them, but we're equally scared when they go out into the world. But nothing to do with the show or anything, Dan, but Vanguard's just fucking cranked up, and like,
oh, thank you.
And reading it, the past couple of issues have just been just better than ever. And also, now you treat people horribly in that book.
Yeah.
I think I don't shy away from trying to improve my work, and getting a good crit, I think, is vital for people to improve what they do. You need honest feedback of what you're doing right or wrong, and if you can find someone that can give you that, that's fantastic, because they're giving you a roadmap of how to improve. And for an individual, I personally think it's very difficult to see
absolutely
where some of the areas which you're lacking, and if someone can point that out for you in a nice constructive way, I think that's invaluable.
I mean,
we've been talking about that since Imba was on. Imba came on in the early days. And
that is
one.
The name I was thinking, you know, the amount of times we've talked to Chris as well, like, there are fans of his work that just thinks, you know, everything he touches is gold. He doesn't necessarily think that. And when he gives it to like these pros, he doesn't want them to say, "Ah, you're perfect." You know,
book. I hate that. I hate that culture of everyone. Oh, what a marvelous comic that is! How brilliant! And they walk away and they say, "Nah, I didn't really like it." Someone else.
That's awful. Face.
That's
bad. And like, if someone comes to you, it's hard to kind of judge because it's kind of interpersonal stuff, but asking for feedback and saying, like, balls out the bathtub on this one, what do you think? If you don't think it cuts the mustard, I think you've kind of got a duty to say, yeah, I'm not too sure about that, mate, or maybe you should consider this, or maybe you should consider that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if they said, oh, what do you think of this? Can you read this properly? And like, well, I was having trouble with that. It kind of maybe spurs the person to kind of reconsider what they've done. Maybe if they might stick with it, but maybe they reconsider it and improve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Let's not give that any more oxygen.
Yeah. No.
Yes. FDS. FDS.
I'll tell you what, we should get some oxygen to. We got a letter. Didn't
we? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
This would cheer you up, bring the thing up. It's from Gary, and he sent an email to Tony, and he said it'd be
he
great
bought
to
a copy of the Hawk Chronicles.
Brilliant.
It's very kind of him. Yeah.
Hi, Tony. Please do let Sarah know I'd love to see more of her art. Yeah, it'd be great to catch up with you, Vince, and Dan at a con. Rich Carrington pointed you out to me at your favourite con in Birmingham recently. You were deep in conversation. I didn't want to be that guy that butted in, the other customer. I should really thank you and the guys for being my guides to Small Press Comics. I came back to comics after 30 years away from 2000 AD, but listening to you guys has opened my eyes to so many great Small Press Comics and the excellent Comic House app. Yes, your subtle plugs worked on me. What you do makes a real difference for fans and creators alike. Take care, Gary. So thank you, Gary.
Gary's part
of a sort of part of the 2000 AD community. I think he does. Is it the Eastern Contingent or something? There's like, you know, they have a little group, don't they? Sometimes Southern Contingent, something like that. I can't remember. But yeah, he's part of that. He's good. We're Facebook friends, which makes you proper friends in real life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's very nice for him to do that. So thank you, Gary.
And, yes. No. Yeah. Thank you. That's lovely. Cheers, Gary. Lovely to read. That was
the 2000 AD Art Challenge. I think they won 3 months. It's changed. It was Halo Jones. It's now Judge Death. So.
Oh, Rory Donald's done one that's fucking killer.
It's fucking great.
Yeah.
When they come straight out of the gate, like, good like that, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Have you drawn Judge Death before, Dan?
I've done a sketch card. I don't think I've really done a proper one. There's so many characters I'd love to draw, but never get the time to sort of really do it.
Yeah, great, I suppose it's time, isn't it, really? Yeah, it is a great design. I remember I drew one for Sarah Harris, actually. Oh, okay. And, you know, I'd never drawn before, and just, you know, I mean, part of the joy is I love, like, doing commissions and stuff when it's a character I know nothing of, or if you know, I don't know the comic, because then you get to do some research or reference, and you look at amazing art, and you have to look at the character's design, and it gives you a completely new perspective of it. And that Judge Death design is amazing.
I love it when people do, like, his uniform ill-fitting, and it sort of ends at the mid, like down his forearm, stuff like that.
Yeah, we get you.
Yeah. It's good stuff. So, should we crack into one of the reviews?
Yes. Now, as we promised, we've got a batch of reviews here. We're going to spend a few minutes on each one.
You've got four in you, V.
I've got four. Yes.
Well, me and Dan have got three. Do you want to start then?
Right. Okay.
Do you want to do your one first, or?
I'll kick off. So get ready and with your pencils at the ready to add to your wish lists, because there's a lot of awesome comics.
Are you doing that saucy one first?
No, that's I'm saving that one to the end. And it's because of you two that I actually read that one. So
awesome.
Yeah. But my first one is a Kickstarter reward. I got a digital one. It's an American comic. That I just discovered. I think I plugged it in one of our shout out sections. And it's Tomb of the White Horse. Now, this is the writer is Ian Mondrick. Artist is Benjamin A. E. Philby, who I think is English. I could be wrong.
Spy, isn't he?
Yeah, probably. Everyone's a spy. Who? What? Philby. Leslie Atlansky is colorist, and Zach Sam is the letterer. Does the letters. This is a sort of 36-page full color one shot. And basically from the campaign, it serves as a standalone story and the first of a four-part horror series. That I didn't really know. You know, it was only when I was making notes for this week's show that I went back to the campaign and discovered it was part of a four-part horror series. I don't think they're going to be connected. I don't think. But, you know, who knows? I mean, this immediately sold me just from the cover alone anyway. I think I was talking about it. The cover is a print that I want on my wall, and this is a brilliant horror comic. Basically, as a blizzard descends upon a remote distribution centre, a mysterious package is delivered. Calm down, Tony. The three-man night crew will be witness to unspeakable horrors born from within the Tomb of the White Horse. it's a brilliant sort of... It just reminded me of a when you discover a great independent horror movie that you just watch on a Saturday night, and you know that the budget, they don't have millions and millions, so it's just one setting, small cast, and just loads and loads of atmosphere. Mm. That's totally what this book is. I mean, the cover itself, you've got this logo, which is quite, you know, I like the logo, but then you just have this, you know, the bottom of the page is this you know, rectangular like building with light coming from the door, and then above it you can just see this huge sort of monolithic sort of like black box with weird tree roots growing around it. And so immediately it's like, oh, what's going on? They look tentacle like, but they're not actually tentacles. I think that's what sold me, because I thought they were tentacles. Who doesn't love tentacles?
Yeah,
born.
You know. But the book, so this is one that I pledged on the digital, because obviously with US Kickstarters and stuff, I can't afford to get the physicals anymore. I just can't.
Yeah.
With
postage. Yeah, okay, yeah.
There was one I was looking at the other day that Dan Mallier showed me, and it looks fantastic, but it was $24 to send a single issue.
Oh,
in the States. $24. Yeah. It's like a 30-page comic.
Yeah. So
I can't fucking do that.
No, nobody mentioned Tim Truman. 18 months I've been waiting for that now. I only spent $40 on it.
Yeah. Look, I'll hug you next time I see you.
Thank you. You know you will.
Yep. That's a horror story in itself. No, but this though, and that says a lot, because, you know, if you've got to think about the post, you know, if you're posting books out and stuff, especially those US creators, have a think about how much you're charging for your digital and what you're offering in terms of your books. Because I'm someone that will throw a couple of pounds for a digital copy for a Kickstarter. Not always when I'm buying them online, but when it comes to Kickstarter, I'm a little bit more generous. You know, $3 or $4.
I've got to say, like, if it's going over $4 for a single issue of a comic for digital, that's not for me. I'm really? It's shouldn't be charging that much, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one, I think was $4, which was my maximum. And it's a 36-page, just sort of one and done. I think if it was an issue one of something, I maybe wouldn't have pledged. But I think because I was getting the story in one hit, I just thought, well, just go for it. But the story itself, that brilliant setup, from panel one, you've already got the brilliant sort of atmosphere. You know, there's snow everywhere. You know, and everyone knows that I love The Thing, and that sort of, it's got that kind of atmosphere, the isolation. And the dread and the gloom. And it really does build up. It kind of starts as sort of a mix of, you know, there's only like three sort of main characters who are just here when this sort of delivery arrives. And it's just this huge crate wrapped up in sort of plastic and stuff. And they're sort of intrigued by it. And as it goes on, you eventually get one of them who just wants to undo and see what the crate is. And when he cuts the plastic, there's loads and loads of books, like old leather-bound books.
Okay.
And they think, that's weird. And then they just keep, you know, like, because this thing is about 12 feet high, something like that. So they're taking away all these books. And now underneath the books is this huge sort of like black box that has like a key code thing on it. And when that happens, then cue the horror, you know, them starting to have visions of things and weird stuff happening. I won't say, you know, I don't, as it goes on, there's a brilliant sort of pacing to it, and a build up of, you know, the sort of the unnerving atmosphere, the isolation sort of really builds into it as well. And it's not too gruesome, but in the last, like every great sort of and, you know, think of like some great horror movies that are all tension until the last like 15 minutes are just pure terror. It's that kind of thing. It captures that brilliantly well. And when it does kick off, it was absolutely stunning. You know, it was grisly.
Sort of style art is it? Is it sort of realistic, or is it?
It's sort of a mix of the two. This is something I can imagine. You know, this is like a book, if I was going to talk about, I don't know, potential publishers, maybe. You know, the sort of thing you see from like Vault or you know, people like that. So it's high quality stuff throughout, because the colouring as well has it's sort of solid watercolouring, but there's something, I don't know, it's hard to tell. It's not bright colours, it's slightly muted as well.
I'll
have to send you guys the copy actually, so you can see what I'm talking about. But the letter, you know, but it's the whole thing from beginning to the end is professional.
Nice.
And these guys, you know exactly what they're doing. And it's a fresh take on, and it is, obviously with the setup, there's an ancient sort of mythic horror going on. But what lays within this tomb, because that's essentially what it is, it's in the title, is something that I haven't seen before in comics. So when it happened, when the reveal happens, because you know, you don't have to be an idiot to find out, we're going to see what's in the box.
Yeah.
I did not expect it.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah, I did not expect it. And it sort of...
Is it a knob?
Oh, well, you've ruined it now, Tony. Everyone knows. Yeah. But no, I thoroughly recommend this. If you go to tombcomic.com, I think that takes you to the Kickstarter page. But yeah, you can follow all the creators on Twitter and stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing more stuff that they do. Because this one was... It was almost a blind Kickstarter buy. Does that make sense? Because the campaign was like, the cover almost sold me. It was almost a, I love that.
You've done well there, because they generally don't turn out well for me.
I know. And I've been on that other side as well. But this one was like, yes, it delivered and then some. So, you know, I'm interested to see where this goes. So, yeah, Tomb of the White Horse is my first one. Like I say, find the creators, tombcomic.com. And, we're starting off on a high note. So, nice. Who wants to go next?
You want to go deep?
Yeah, I threatened in the last episode to read an episode of Surrealsville by Rob White. You can find it on Twitter at Rob White Comics.
Yeah, we often mention him, don't we? In the Comic House ad, missed that. Yeah.
He's very prolific. I mean, the first book, how many pages did I say it was? I'll just take a quick look.
Is it like 90 something? Or
229 pages.
Oh, no, I was way off.
So. That's just the first issue, and it's up to 17 issues on Comic House, so there's a lot.
God, are the issues that size?
I don't know.
Bloody hell.
No, maybe not. Yeah. Surrealsville is a comic featuring surreal, semi-autobiographical shenanigans, off-the-wall observational comedy, and other assorted randomness. It's a really pun-heavy comic. Essentially, it's a page a joke.
Okay.
It's kind of... There's a couple of stories which kind of, it's a reoccurring character, reoccurring gag, which kind of gets better as it kind of, you read more of it. But really pun heavy. I don't really mind pun stuff. Puns are fun.
No, I like the penguin stuff.
It's one of, I think the humor's quite subjective. Some people love it and other people not so much. Yeah, there's like a couple of reoccurring strips that come up. One's like an Indiana Jones style character. See if I can get his name. It's kind of Rick Risk, Explorer Extraordinaire. And he sort of gets up to these shenanigans where he's trying to get some lost temple. And when he gets there, there's like someone trying to flog him modern day, like a credit card or...
Okay.
Some other modern day sort of thing, and that's better as it kind of goes along. The humor is kind of relatively, it's inoffensive. It's not so much for me. It's kind of more humor that you'd find on a newspaper strip. Does that make sense?
You've got quite a dark sense of humor as well, haven't you?
Quite dark. It's relatively
filthy.
Yeah, filthy, and I like the kind of dark. Like, there's one panel where, like, the woman says, "You dog," and it cuts to a reveal panel of a dog looking kind of like taken aback, which kind of like, yeah, I'm sure some people find it funny. It's kind of
doggist.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's very subjective. I can't tell you what you find funny and what you don't find funny. You'd have to give it a go. And honestly, there's so much of it in this first issue alone. I think I've got up to 100 and something of it. Rob mentions in the blurb he did like a challenge of doing one a day for a year, and I think he missed out by like four strips, but he did it, so presumably that's why some of the volumes are so long, that he's got such a wealth of material. And to be honest, there's kind of the ones I read, there's not many duffers, so he's kind of on the mark. I think
I've seen the covers, man. Is the art reminiscent of the covers inside?
Yeah,
is it?
The art is completely like what you see on the cover is what you get inside. It's black and white, does the job. If you've got the Comic House subscription, it's all on there if you go check it out.
That's a lot of comics as well.
It's a lot of comics.
Yeah, that shows what good a subscription it is, isn't it?
Yeah. So get stuck in. I think it changes slightly from when it goes on. I'm not sure if there's a story that runs through it or that. I can't imagine you do 200 pages of 17 issues of puns. I mean, the man must be a fucking beast if he can do it for that long. Yeah. So we'll have to see.
Cool.
Yeah, go check it out. See what you think.
Nice one, man.
Nice.
Cool. Should I do mine?
Yep.
Yes.
My first one is Park Bench Kensington by Peony Gent. Peony, full disclosure, is the lady I work with at No Brow. It's home printed, sewn together. It's got a risograph cover. It's 18 pages. And it is a genuine piece of lovely art. It really is. I don't know what it's like for you guys, but I work. Bear in mind, I work at a comic company, and all we do all day is talk about comics.
Yeah.
And I sit literally sit opposite Peony, and we talk about, oh, we've done this, and what are we tweeting that, and what's when the distributor's coming in, and it's like that. But we never really talked about our own comics, and we're both aware of each other's comics, you know. And we were sat together in one of the quieter moments at MCM. And I realized I had a Hawk Chronicles, which I gave to her. And then she started telling me about her comic as well. And so we are now, she gave me this lovely piece of artwork, which is quite expensive if you go to her, not overly expensive, but is much more expensive than the Hawk Chronicles on her site. And I gave her my Tatty Old comic, which I feel a bit bad for now. I think I need to give her another something else to make up for it. But so,
hers was hand sewn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's sewn the spine in and everything. Yeah, it's and it's done. It's red and orange, the cover, sort of representational of two hands. And it's a little bit abstract on occasion. And it's a red sewn in spine by her. Absolutely lovely. It's the sort of thing you want to put in a bag with a board on straight away, you know, and it's sort of mucked about with. So we got talking about the comic, and I saw on her Twitter, before she gave me a copy of this, she did a piece for jacksonart.com/blog. And she did a sort of discussion of some of her comic work. And it's a really well-written piece, actually. I was talking to her and Tristan about it in the office just yesterday. And she talks about this book, Park Bench Kensington, and how it came about. And what happens is, Peony was sitting on a park bench in Kensington, and a man sits next to her, and he's a guy who was intending to walk into the Bangladeshi High Commission opposite, and he was telling her why he was there and what he was going to do. She was sort of slightly taken aback by this guy, and they're sort of just breaking into conversation with a stranger almost, you know. We're not used to it in London. Those who are not in London, God knows. Nobody speaks to anyone in London.
Yeah. If someone talks in London, you're going to get mugged.
Yeah, yeah. Or you think they're a weirdo.
Your angle?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he sat there and he talked to her quite extensively about his life and about the fact that he was about to walk into the building, Bangladeshi High Commission, off the top of my head, and declare to them that he was an illegal immigrant so that he could get home to see his family. And he was talking about how he'd been in the country for 10 years and it was becoming increasingly harder to live his life because it's so difficult to get any kind of decent paying job and to socialize and to extend your life beyond, you know, just living in a small place. And it was only a short interaction, but one that, and I've had this from Peony as well. She said she found it quite affecting, you know, it brought home certain sort of facts about life and people and the difference between us and stuff like that. And so she tried to remember everything that was said. And apart from two lines in the book, everything is what he said to her. And she sort of legged it home and scribbled down what he'd said. And I'm more and more recently concentrating on the validity of conversation and the way it's depicted in comics. And I think very few people do language well. Very few people do conversations well, and very few people do even just a line of what someone says. It's often exposition heavy. It's often too much of something and too little of another. And people seem to write in full sentences, which isn't what people speak in and stuff like that. And words are abstract, have an abstract content in the same way that the art does in this book. And the tone and the language as it is represented both in the words and the tone of the piece on the page is just spot on. Absolutely, I absolutely loved it. Me and Tristan at work, who's one of our designers, were just marveling at it. It's just saying what an absolute piece of art it is, you know. And Peony's she's a nice person. She's not bragging about it. She's not one of those people, which I love. I love those people who don't like go on about being creators all the time, you know. They just do comics, you know. And it really has a depth of emotion that you don't see in a lot of stuff, and it's done very, very the language and the words are just minimal. And some of the pages are in the majority done in six panel, so two descending down the page, And some of them are blank, some of them are drawn, some of them are repeated images, some of them are just shapes. Sometimes there's a great page that's, it's just a mess of hands, and there's one that's sort of representation of nature around them and the buildings and where they're sitting and what they're saying. And it's just really, really affecting. I found it very, very true, I suppose is what I'm trying to say. It's an experiment, but it is an experiment. You know, these things are experiments. Same as somebody like Gareth Hopkins' work or something like that. It is experimental, but it's one that is just done with care. You can always tell. I can always tell an artist sometimes, a good artist, is they're so tidy and clean.
Yeah.
And organized, and I suppose you see that in the graphic designer world a bit, don't you, as well?
Yeah.
And there's real sort of care taken on this. You can see the stitching down the side and the shape of the pages and how it's cut and everything. Yeah, really, and accurate in relation to an interaction between two people. I just genuinely highly recommend it. So this is a lovely piece. If you go to peonygent.com, you can get, there's a tab you can click on shop, and if you follow Peony, peonygent, you can find her on Twitter. jacksonart.com/blog will lead you to the piece she wrote. It's quite a long piece, well worth reading. Or if you click on to, if you scroll a bit down on the Twitter, you'll find the piece. She's posted a link to it. You will have just met her, Vince, because she was at Thought Bubble. She got a table at Thought Bubble, and she's also obviously part of the No Brow crowd, so I'm sure you will have just met her.
But, it was lovely meeting you.
So that's my first one. Yeah, really, really good. I've got a little bit of a theme this week. It's all a bit esoteric. The three I've got are all a bit strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all a bit bizarre. And I've also got three special mentions, so if I can give a special mention to Panonica 2, by Nick Prolix, because he literally sent it to me about an hour ago, and I haven't had a chance. I've only sort of scan read it, but it's another piece of abstract beatnik jazz in the form of a comic by Nick. So that'll be that. I'll just bought a copy of that as well. So there you go. That's my one.
Nice.
My first one.
And continuing my theme of pretty dark comics is my second choice, which is Lad, The Homecoming. This is one that we saw sort of doing the rounds when it was a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And certainly we had its editor on the show when we had a show about editing, Hugo Boylan.
Didn't we? Yes. Hugo did that. Yeah, yeah.
This is by writer Umar Ditter. Artist is Carlos Pedro. Kerry Smith is the letterer. Hugo is the editor. And Dibla Kelly is the designer. It's quite nice for the designer to get a shout out, you know, the layout of the book and stuff.
Yeah.
Because the logo is really nice as well. The logo, you know, I think there's more going on with the logo. Now, basically, the synopsis is a couple of paragraphs. I'll just read the second part before describing a bit more. Engulfing most of the town's perimeter, the forest is home to a mysterious entity known only as the Hermit. For as long as Lad can remember, there's been one mantra in the family: leave the Hermit alone, and the Hermit leaves the family alone. So why was Dad, the patriarchal leader of the family, found savagely beaten and barely clinging on to life just outside the forest? It's a very dark. It's a very dark story about a crime family, and seems to be weird supernatural things going on. Mysteries are going to be played out. This is the first issue. And very much a sort of setup and a build-up. And another brilliant book. Another one that absolutely smashed it. it's, for one thing, it's a stunning-looking book. Carlos, I know he's been, looking at the back, he's been working in comics since 2006 and has done some work on things like Elephant Men and the likes. But watch out for this dude.
Right, okay.
The first couple of pages, it's all black and white. Even the cover's sort of black and white. And the cover has, like, the main character with, like, a bloodied sort of cricket bat. There's these weird sort of cherub-like characters all around him. Yeah, so that hasn't played out yet either. But, you know, the use of light and sort of shadow and just negative space is unparalleled. In the first couple of pages, there's basically a homeless guy being chased through the wood by the family, basically, in a car. And the way that the lighting is done on there is absolutely stunning. The family catch up with this hobo, who you think is the hermit, or they think is the hermit, but I don't think it's the hermit. the way this book builds up, they obviously just wanted a bit of retribution, so they capture this guy, take him back, and give him a good kicking. Whilst the rest of the family are in the hospital, and this and the father figure is basically in a coma. And lad, the interesting thing about this, it's almost got this. The family don't have any names. For instance, lad is the name of the main character. There's like dad, elder uncle. They're called things like that. They don't have any sort of first names, which I thought.
Okay,
titles.
Yeah, they've got titles. Yeah, and which was quite interesting. But immediately, I already knew exactly who they were talking about. Because they have such a distinct style. I will say. And it's got it on the cover that this is mature content. The first bit of dialogue contains a C-bomb, and there's many of them in the book.
We love a C-bomb.
This is a book rife with saucy, fruity language, which is absolutely perfect for what it is, because this isn't a crime. We're not talking The Sopranos. We're not talking, you know... It's perfectly fitting. There is an awful lot of swearing, you know, and it's the sort of people. Some people may say, "Oh, you know, it's just lazy to use swearing like that." But reading it, I knew exactly who these people were because I've seen people talking like that. You know, those people that every other word is an F word in their vocabulary. We all know them. Yeah. Don't make me start. And it's just the way this family is. There's a mystery playing out because lad is obviously he's a bit chav like. I don't think the rest of the family don't really respect him as much. You know, they tell him to basically fuck off in as many words. But when he goes to visit the father in the hospital, this is one of the things that leads me to believe that there's strange things going on. Lad seems to see and hear things that other people don't. Because he walks into the hospital room where his father is, and immediately the lettering bubble from the father is almost Nordic. It's like a Viking sort of font that's being used. But the father's lying there, and he's got like a weird crown and all these weird sort of tubes coming from his body, and there's all these cherubs hanging around. So it clearly looks like a vision that lad is having. So there's this. Can he see things, or is this all in his head? And it basically tells him they haven't caught the hermit. They think they have. You need to go and catch him. So it builds up, and because the rest of the family are like, you don't want to mess with the hermit because that's going to mess everything up, and the family are terrified from it. So they deal with the situation that they've got, and the issue ends with lad. Basically heading into the forest, and you know things are about to go downhill. But you really have to check this out because
this is a series then? It's
going to be a series, yeah. I believe a mini-series. It's like four issues. I mean, because the first issue is like 28 pages.
When did this come out then? It must be due the second Kickstarter then, surely, isn't it?
I would have thought maybe fairly soon.
Yeah. Maybe people are avoiding Christmas, I think, sometimes, don't they?
Yeah. And I know the creators involved, you know, they know what they're doing and how to work on books and stuff. But, you know, and I hope the second issue isn't too far away because I enjoyed the first one so much. Because I literally had no idea what this was. And I did think, do I really want to read a book about a bunch of chav criminals?
Sorry, mate, did you buy the physical one of this or did you get the...
I got the digital. I got the digital. Okay. But yeah. I definitely double dip.
Good,
because this is a good book, and it's definitely, once again, absolutely professional above the board, you know. But you know, the first two books I've talked about, I can't see like a big name publisher logo on them, and I believe these are self-published, but they're as good as anything you're finding on the shelf. You know, more so
or not these days.
I want to read out some of the dialogue, because it's great dialogue. Like Umar's, writing is top notch on this in terms of like setting up characters. And sometimes a person just has to say two sentences and you immediately judge them or clock them and you know what
they're.
And this book's full of that. Yeah, but I can't read it because some of the best lines I'd have to edit out of the show. So, Lad the Homecoming. Believe the hype. It was as good as they were saying. And, looking forward to seeing more. So, I'll put a link in the show notes. But, yeah, I know the creators are two... Well, they're all great small press creators.
I think they're both members of the page, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And you Mar's done lots of work in the past as well. So,
yeah, I think I met him at London Super Comic Con, the last one. I think that's where I last saw him, I think.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
He was in the pub afterwards when we went in the pub. Do you remember?
Oh, that's
right. He was with Sidesy and all that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But he smashed it with this one, the whole gang is. So, yeah. Cool. Check that one out. That's my one.
D-Man.
Yeah, I've got an awesome one. I've been hanging on to this one for a little while, fantastic. Dr. Crow. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to read this.
No.
But is that
the one that had a crossover with Elephant Merrick?
It is the one, yeah. That's how I found the character.
Okay. No, I've not read this either.
I think you recommended the crossover as well, I think.
Yeah, the crossover. I kind of backed the Kickstarter, and that's fantastic. It's the two characters look like they could be in the same universe. Right. Maybe they do have a shared universe. It's the debut issue, and it follows the unique adventures of Dr. Crow as he battles the unknown and the forbidden populating the dark bowers of man's domain. Written by Corey Freer. This first issue's got art from Matt Horak, Tony Gregory, and Philippe Kuna. There's a lot of creators in this one because there's three tales, and there's three creators per tale.
Okay.
And they're all written by Corey. It's essentially kind of like, imagine like Isagi Ojimbo or Conan. Each little story, you're dropped into a scenario that's already playing out with Dr. Crow in it. He's like a kind of a gentleman adventurer, sort of all garbed in black, and he's got one of those old apothecary masks on that look like they're like beaks. And what they used to do.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
They used to stuff like poultice and medicines and stuff in it. So they thought wasn't smelling all the shit of other people, that they wouldn't get ill. So that was the belief. But his is like a kind of steampunk version. And he's got like a ton of gadgets and stuff. And then the various stories, there's one where it's quite trippy. There's a young boy who thinks he's been taken by a demon. So he has to use his gadget to kind of go into the boy's brain and battle the demon inside his head. What's the second one about? He's got like a sidekick and they got to deal with like a ghost infestation and kind of like a remote manor house. And the third one is like a kind of a plague story where he's recounting one of his adventures to a naysayer and sort of basically gets him to shut his mouth. It's really interesting. I think there's like four or five issues on Comixology. I really enjoyed it. It's great old school pulp stuff. The writing's spot on, really tight and focused. The artwork's the same. There's even though there's different artists per three stories, they already know their stuff. The colouring's great.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Tony Gregory's page on Twitter. There's some good stuff on there, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I would really like to kind of get a trade of this if it was going. Yeah. Even if you've not read I'd not read any of it and I just went straight from Merrick getting the crossover. And I think that's a real kind of great move the two of them have pulled off there, because if you like one, you'd like the other. So if you're unaware of one, you'd kind of jump in and check the other person out. And so if you kind of like, if you like Merrick, Hellboy, BPRD, any of that kind of stuff, you'll love Dr. Crow. That's Crow
within Cognition.
Cognition. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So go check it out.
Nice one.
Really enjoyed it.
Cool. We're rocking here, aren't we? What's going on?
Yeah.
I'm going to do technically not a comic, I suppose, but something inspired by, done by a comic creator we like. And it's Frank Tober.
Yes.
An
Inktober tribute to Frank Sidebottom. I'm going to say, created by John Tucker. I'm going to say he's a little bit obsessed by Frank Sidebottom. I think I'd be the first to admit it.
Yeah.
Frank is a character and a half who sadly passed away, but was this sort of anarchic sort of musician stroke poet stroke TV presenter stroke puppet master.
He used to talk
master.
Like this, didn't he? Didn't he have a shine? His voice was basically this all the time, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. He had one of those, a swimming clip, wasn't it, on his nose?
Yeah. Yeah,
he was. He basically lived to annoy. I think, and I kind of admire people who do that. I kind of like that. So this shows how organised people who do Inktober are. Well, how long ago did Inktober finish? 6 days ago.
Yeah,
and already I've got a collection of the sketches. To be fair, I like them every day, so I was liking them. So I've seen most of these, but it's nice to have them in a little collection. So it's a sort of A5 card covered. The cover is very distinctive. I posted it on Twitter earlier, and it's a big eyeball with a sort of paper cut slight shine on it, you know? It was so there was a limited number. I got 10 of 100, and you had to give a donation to cancer research, good old John. And then send a screenshot of your donation to him, and he sent you a copy of this. So that ain't bad, is it?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So he did that. I did that, and then he sent me this. It's just basic one-page pictures of different things that Frank Sidebottom was done, and little. There's different inspirations for each page. You'll like it, Dan, because there's Dead Scary Week, Robo Frank plus Robo Puppy. He did a RoboCop thing. there's one which is the Nevermind album cover, but it's Frank Sidebottom swimming in the terrapin tank at Timperley Aquatic. he's done a sort of Let It Be Beatles cover. There's one with Frank as Elvis doing a kung fu kick, karate kick. One as Queen. There's one of my favourite ones is Dead Scary Week, Creature from the Timperley Aquatic Lagoon, which is Frank Sidebottom as the creature from the Black Lagoon. Frank's Labyrinth, with his, you know, holding up his palms. And he's got those big, stupid eyeballs he's got drawn on his stupid head. The Wicker Frank is one of them. That's good. The last one is he's done a... what's the collection cover on the Beatles?
Dr. Pepper,
Sergeant Pepper.
Yeah, that's what I get. I'm trying to avoid saying that. I couldn't think of anything else. So it's like a Sergeant Pepper, and all the characters have got Frank Sidebottom style heads apart from a couple. You know. I watched a documentary at John's suggestion about Frank.
Is it Chris Seeley? Is that the guy?
Right, yeah, man, yes. Yeah. It's there's like a 2-hour one you can find on BBC Four, I think, that I watched, and it's good stuff. So it's for a good cause. I posted this, and someone, I think it was Charles Raymond, said, "Oh, I didn't get one." And John Tucker did something similar to, "You definitely won't get one if you go and pledge to cancer research. I definitely won't send you one." So I think there might be maybe two left or something that you might have just sent out. Yeah. But it's a nice thing to do. I'd buy anything by John, as we all do. Yeah. And it's nice to have, because a lot of his stuff is sort of like the Sido poster and stuff like that. It's very sort of limited edition. And I kind of like to have stuff. There's a few people out there who I collect the work of, because I think somebody will realise how good these people are one day.
You hope someone will. Yeah, because John has got a special talent in these.
Yeah, he has. There's a few people out there. Another one being Gustavo Vargas is another one. I notice everyone has copied my quote and said this bloke will be working for Image soon. I see that again in a... So let's face it, let's create that buzz, because I think these sort of guys need to be... It's like Robin Hitchcock. Are you aware of Robin Hitchcock? Do you know who he is?
No.
Singer-songwriter Robin Hitchcock. He's been back for 30 years. He was the lead singer of the Soft Boys. And I buy every one of his albums, because every time I think... somebody will definitely realise how good this guy is one day, and I've been doing it for like 30 years now, but maybe one day. So let's hope, John. And it's good stuff. It's for the right cause, and it made me giggle. So Frank Tober, you can go to www.johntucker.co.uk, or you can follow John on Twitter at johntuckerart. There you go.
Yes. Okay, my third one is a Dark Horse book that I bought in the spirit of Halloween. I think the timing of its release was perfect. And that is Count Crowley, Reluctant Midnight Monster Hunter, issue 1.
Oh, I've heard of this as well. Yeah.
Written by David Dastmalchian. I hope I got that right. Art by Lucas Kettner and coloured by Lauren Alf. It was a book that I read and I thought all the way through, I know this artist. Because I was loving it. I was thinking, where do I know this artist from? And he was the artist from one of my personal favourite, I think it was an image series, Witch Doctor. And I think that's only had two volumes, but just the art in that and the creature design and everything. And this is a guy who was brought up on creepy comics and Bernie Wrightson and stuff like that. And, you know, he's the next stage of that, if you know what I mean. He's the new version of that, because Lucas's work is absolutely phenomenal. I'm a huge fan of it. I did not you know, looking at the cover, I didn't realize it was him at first. And he does like all the art, you know, all the coloring as well. And he's got a lovely sort of, it's proper sort of traditional inks, but the coloring looks more like ink washes. It's still bright, you know, because this has a sort of a real sort of, you know, his 1950s monster movie kind of.
It's almost like a Mad Magazine-y style in certain parts, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
I'm just looking at it now, mate. It's nice. I really like that.
Yeah.
He could almost do an issue of The Goon. He could almost do like a guest issue of that, I think.
Totally. I believe he's done some work for Creepy as well.
Right,
so,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
The story itself is about aspiring reporter Jerry Bartman is furious when she's demoted to hosting the nightly creature feature at a small town TV station. But Jerry quickly learns that there's more to horror hosting than just introducing bad B-movies. Her first night in the costume of her missing predecessor, Count Crowley, finds her face to face with a living, breathing monster. Or was she just that drunk?
We've all been there, mate.
Yeah. And it is a comic that immediately starts, you know, she stumbles out of the station, knocking back a bottle of whiskey, comes face to face with a panicked human being that, let's just say, he transforms. You probably, you know, it's not a big jump to think about what he turns into. And then it flashes back to how she got into that stage. Actually, you know, before it flashes back, there's a wonderful, like, just splash page of a smashed whiskey bottle. And in the reflection, you can see, and it's more of a silhouette sort of reflection as well, you can see the monster sort of jumping at her as she's pointing a pistol in his face. That, you know, if that's an original inked piece of work, dear Lord, put that on my wall. I'd absolutely love that. And this was, for me, this was such a fun book to read. It was sat in my Comixology for a little bit. And I thought, I really must get around to reading this. And then as soon as I did, you know, 5 minutes went past and I just absolutely devoured it. It's a great, you know, because the main character is both unlikable. It's a very unlikable main character who's quite complicated and also instantly readable. You know, this is someone with a chip on their shoulder and a drinks problem. And basically, you know, she starts off doing a sort of local report on a Renaissance fair and completely messes it up by being a bit of a bastard, and everyone turns against her. So she loses her job, and her brother works at the station, and you know, the sort of the classic horror movie. I mean, this is more in America. We don't get it so much in the UK. They have those sort of late night people who are dressed up and introducing Plan 9 from outer space.
Don't they? Yeah, you get that.
And it's basically that's a huge ratings boost for the station. But the Count Crowley has gone missing, so they need someone to put on the makeup and introduce the stuff. She doesn't really want to do it, and when you see her actually doing it, she clearly just doesn't give a fuck about horror. You know. So it's funny, it's charming, it's quick-witted, like I say, it's beautiful throughout, and it has just that energy of the old, you know, those classic, you know, the Creepies and the EC comics and that,
yeah,
that
I love
sort
that,
of,
man, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the universal.
It's also got a little
movies.
Bit of a sense of humour about it, isn't it? It's got, it's not sort of completely browbeating horror. It's got a quirk to it, isn't it? It really has.
Yeah. That kind of works when it's got that little wink of humor, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, if there's lots of people out there who are probably fans of Monster Squad, remember that?
Oh yeah, it's great.
If you like that, then you'll like this. It's that sort of tone. It's almost a modern story that feels like it was told in the 80s. Does that make sense?
So
it's definitely one that I haven't bought many Dark Horse books recently, so this was just a, you know, another shot in the dark, and it's one I'm going to keep coming back to because it just charmed me so much. I mean,
I love Dark Horse, man. Yeah, they've been going, like, the BPRD universe is so good.
Yeah,
if you're not reading that, you're missing out. You
and
know?
Occasionally they just bring out stuff like this. You know, these little mini series that people really need to check out because, you know, it's fresh sort of original content. And another, you know, if you like those old EC collections and stuff that had the classic, you know, there was always this character, wasn't there, that was introducing strips, and you know that they've always like the Crypt Keeper kind of thing. With the cliffhanger sort of moment at the end of the book, it then cuts to like a Crypt Keeper like character called Friar Fear. He's basically just like a monk. And it, like, you know, he says tune in next week, you know, next month for this, and it's got like a little mail, like the classic old comics had those like mail order ads.
Yeah.
It has a classic one of like monster masks and stuff in the bottom. And looking at it now, I can see that one of them is Donald Trump, which is hilarious.
There you go. Yeah. Do you remember Moviedrome? I used to love Moviedrome.
Yes.
Alex Cox used to introduce it.
Yeah.
And that's where I discovered loads of great directors and horror films. And
yeah,
you know, he used to show like Rabid or Scanners. And,
yeah.
You know, this sort of thing. Some really classic horror
films. And
that's
how like a lot of like, you know, directors and stuff, they used to stay up late, watch these monster movies and totally go into the genre. So, and I love all of that and the atmosphere of it, and this sort of comic really captures it. I'm interested to see where it goes, because this person clearly becomes a monster hunter, so the universe is going to expand from these issues. But issue one was a great sort of introduction, and it was a nice sort of reintroduction to an artist that I kind of had forgotten was one of my favorite artists. So
okay.
Yeah,
and I have to say, I've just saucily had a little sneak peek at your final choice, which I won't say what it is, and I'm looking forward to you talking about it.
Oh dear. Yeah, but
we'll to be reversing our roles this week.
Yeah,
you seem to have the sexy,
and there's
stuff
no pun intended, but my next choice will come up very soon.
Yeah, it will do.
Yeah. Right,
D man, go on, D.
So I pre-ordered this a little while ago, and I was really happy when it just turned up apropos of nothing from the release. And it was Starblazer.
Space Fiction Adventures. I didn't pre-order this. Yeah.
Volume 1. It's got two stories in it, Operation Overkill and Jaws of Death. when I initially got it, I was kind of a bit put off, because it's they made it like oversized. So it's gone up maybe like a third.
Okay.
So I was like, okay. And some of the artwork's kind of, it does hold up. Some of it's a bit so-so, but because obviously I presumed it was drawn for the smaller size.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, after reading about a third of the way in, I kind of lost myself in it and just was just really enjoying it. It's interesting reading the story where, like, back in the day when it was doing this, the stories were a lot more clipped and just cracking on. And
yeah.
And he said, like, oh, he saw a bad guy and fired his gun. And then it's like the panel's like, ah, oh, some guy getting blown up. It doesn't like fuck around. There's no kind of lots of exposition. So let's just fly here, fly there, shoot that. And there's some notes from Grant Morrison at the beginning. And he's saying when he had to go for this meeting of how he was going to write some of these stories. Because the first story is written by Grant Morrison with Enrique Alicante. Doing the artworks, because Operation Overkill, and basically he used to get notes back from every script he wrote and write more space battles and every issue you had to have loads of space battles in. And even in the first one there's about three or four just gunfights in space. And the first story there's a reoccurring character that pops up, and he's, what's the guy's name, it's let me search for it, Kane, K-A-Y-N, and he's just some dude who has like kind of like these glasses on. He's a bit of like a Han Solo type.
I think
experiment.
I know this. I've got a pile of them in front of me, and he's in one of them actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this one, like, they, it is quite an amusing start. Basically, there's the whole universe, galaxy was at war, and they thought, "Oh, fuck this war! Like, we're not doing war anymore. So let's put all the guns and weapons on one planet and just leave them there." And it cuts to this planet, and it's just a planet just like stacked up to the gills with guns and rockets and spaceships. And as a kid, I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. That's what they would do. And like now the idea is fucking so stupid. It's quite quaint. I quite like it. So the artwork's absolutely dynamite. The second story is written by Dee Broadbent, and the art's by Mick McMahon. So
nice.
That's absolutely lovely to see. And that's more space shenanigans flying around.
So I'm right, they didn't used up. To credit people on these, is that right?
No,
looking through a load now, and I can't see any credits.
That's the problem. Yeah. There's a website, and I think it's on Down the Tubes.
I think it is.
Yeah, they list all the creators for every single issue, and you can, I fucking know that one was done. There's a couple featuring this Kane character, and I've looked them up, and it's Grant Morrison right now.
I've got one in front of me actually called Wipeout, a Mikel R. Kane story.
Yeah,
so it's R. Kane, isn't it? So that's one with that.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So it's good. I'll have read this. And yeah, that's Roddy Morrison. Then that one. Yeah.
It was a fun little read, and there was a. Yeah, read on the train going into work and thought, oh, I'm not sure I'm going to get on with this, but just absolutely blazed through it.
So this is reprints of the original series, and it's two per volume, is it?
Two per volume. I think it was $12.99, but that included postage.
Right.
It's
decent. Quite expensive,
I mean,
though, isn't it?
It is. I wasn't sure about if I'd get more of it. I'd like to cherry-pick the stories I'd get. I'd rather it cheaper and be at the original size.
Yeah, I'd rather it was like a big, like with a spine on it, with like maybe 20 in it or something.
Yeah, that'd be, rather than piecing it out.
Yeah.
I think they've done, looking in the back, I think they've done the same with the Commando books.
Yeah, I think a while ago, the Commando ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
But I think they were thicker, they had more in them,
Yeah, I'd rather have it like that, like the great big chonky book, as opposed to like that. But again, I'm not kind of regretting getting that first volume. Will I get a second? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe not. We have to see.
I wonder if they're on Comixology or something. Because Commando is, isn't it? Commando's on Comixology.
I did post up an advert for the Death's Head Omnibus, which is coming out 2020.
Yeah.
And if you use the code in the Awesome Comic Group, you get 20% off.
Ah, okay. Cool.
So check that out, yes?
I'll do mine. So mine is Rocks by Rosie Hathaway. Second week, Rosie. After Vince and I talked about a webcomic last week, and I got a little bit worried that webcomics are things that just disappear and you'll never see them again. You know what I mean? So I have felt like I had a need to buy something, a physical comic from her. So I went over to her, I think it's Etsy shop, I think it is. And I bought a paper for like a proper paper comics, one that is on paper. I bought one called Rocks. Now, it's about rocks. Bizarrely strange. When I opened it up, it's got the second page is a tissue paper page, like a tracing paper page sort of thing.
Yeah.
And in it, I opened it up without really paying much attention to it. And she'd written, "Thanks, Tony, you rock." And I thought, oh, that's really nice of Rosie. She must have heard the review last week. And I thought, oh, no, it just means it's about rocks. So fair enough. So it's all about the history of stones and fossils in the Bournemouth Beach and surrounding areas. So it's a comic that Rosie decided to do a page a day. A panel a day experiment, unscripted and created solely on sheets of A3 layout paper with no planning or preliminary sketchbook work, created between February and May 2019. And she includes in the back matter a sort of photograph of what she did and how she did it. And it is exactly what it says on the cover. It's done in landscape, a sort of thin landscape style, and you open it up and you go through, and there's a cut. It starts with a sort of close-up on the rocks on a beach and the stones on a beach and are looking out to sea, and clearly the beach is somewhere that Rosie likes to go and have a think and go and pick up stones, and she talks about the unique shapes of stones and picks them up and she takes them home and whether she likes them or not, and when she ruminates a bit on the fact that these stones are older than any religion and they existed before the existence of Homo sapiens, and what some of them are like to hold and what some of them are like to look at. And there's a couple of really lovely pages done in Rosie's, I suppose, trademark sort of brushy. She's got a sort of, what do you think, V? She's got a sort of brushy, elegant style, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's no digital here, I'm going to say. What do you think?
There's a real economy of sort of line well. It's everything's really thought about. And,
there's an iconography to a lot of what she does, and then she pulls out occasionally to give you like a little landscape and some colours and stuff like that. So as she went along, she obviously began to think a bit more about rocks, and she started talking about fossils, and we get a little history of what a fossil means and where their fossils are and what beach she goes onto and what sort of things she can find, mollusks and plants and creatures in these fossils. It's basically what it says. It's a lot of pictures of rocks, plants and fossils. It's strangely silent and comforting, I suppose, in a way. It's just a sort of nice little experiment with art that she's decided to collect in this book. It's she's thanked Ray Chapman at the Bournemouth Natural Science Society and Museum, where you can learn more about it. And 50% of the profits from the sale of this zine go to support the Bournemouth National Science Society, which is nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Printed in Bournemouth by Coastline, whoever they are. I just felt that I just needed something further of Rosie's. We love her work. We like it. And I thought, I just want something to sit on a shelf. So I had most of her stuff. And I thought, oh, this one on Rocks looks interesting. I'll buy a comic on Rocks. So you can see how weird my week has been.
Yeah.
It's not really been about shooting space aliens or beating up supervillains. It's been about Rocks and park benches so far. But it's
Sounds like a good week to meet, dude.
Yeah. Well, I say week. It's just been today. I read all these today. So it's been a sort of nice, quiet. I had most of today off. And I read these. What a nice day. There you go. I've got two other quick special mentions before we get to Vince's last one. Mulp, number 5, by Matt Gibbs and Sarah Dunkerton, with letters by Jim Campbell. The end of the series, an absolute triumphant end to it. Yeah. And it's just fucking gorgeous. Yeah, really nice. I'll do a full review on this one at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I received yesterday Death Inc. Book 3 by Charles Raymond.
Hey.
Fuck me. He put some comics out, didn't he?
Yeah, he does.
I'll get to read it, but having read the previous stuff, I'm gonna say I'm looking forward to it. He sent me a Dropbox link, and we will probably have just purchased it at Thought Bubble.
Yeah. Excellent.
And we'll have him on before the end of the year.
We need to. Obviously, he's in a circle because he's the Hawk Chronicles in here as well. I thought I'd come
say in a circle.
And I've spoken to him about getting him on, so that will happen fairly soon. So
yes, nice. Excellent. I look forward to that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Right, to finish off.
Yeah, I'm going to call this one up on my Comixology because I just downloaded it.
Right, okay. Before I...
So what's this called again?
I'm not going to say the title yet.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you the creators yet, and I'm not going to read the little synopsis. I'm going to read a little bit from the first page. There's kind of like a Star Wars... It's a science fiction book. There's a Star Wars kind of like scrawl on the first page, letting you know kind of what sort of universe we're in. And it starts off with talk about 2027 and aliens, you know, came into contact with Earth, and then they realized that Earth wasn't that great, so then they sort of went away. And humanity, as it says here, unable to build spaceships capable of efficient interstellar travel and distracted by petty bickering and pop entertainment, humans eventually lost interest in the stars. Now, in 2032, imagine this in a James Earl Jones type voice as well. Amid an anti-science presidential administration and public apathy, scientists in an economically crippled America struggle to fund innovative projects. Then, the first ever speech bubble you have is, "I want you to fuck me, sexy fish man." This is...
interesting crotch arrangement on her costume, I'm going to say.
Yeah,
there.
This is by Vault Comics. Yeah. It's written by Sarah Beatty and Tim Seeley. Art by Rebecca Isaacs. Coloured by Kurt Michael Russell.
Hey.
Past guest of the show and brilliant colourist. And this is Money Shot, number 1.
Now, I'm going to say people might not know Sarah Beatty as a comic person, but was she a Saturday Night Live writer? I've got a feeling something like that, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's a comedy writer.
Particularly sharp humour and one that appeals to us on Twitter. Yeah. We'll occasionally send each other tweets she sends that are quite funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This has that sort of, that sort of sense of humour mixed with, obviously, Tim Seeley's. I mean, Tim Seeley's a great writer in his own respect as well. So it's fucking fantastic book, but it's one that you must read, just not on public transport, because here comes the synopsis. In the near future, space travel is ludicrously expensive and largely ignored. Enter Christine Campos, inventor of the Starshot teleportation device, with a big idea. She'll travel to new worlds, engage intimately with local aliens, and film her exploits for a jaded Earth populace trying to find something new on the internet. Now, Chris and her merry band of scientists come porn stars explore the universe, each other, and the complexities of sex in Money Shot. A story about scientists having sex with aliens for the glory of mankind and money. This is... I read this earlier today, thinking, what is it going to be like? And it is, obviously, you read the synopsis and you think, oh my, you know, you just imagine that it's going to be over the top, not safe for work, you know, all kinds of filth. And it is, and it isn't.
Yeah, it's not like super close-up brown eye, is it? It's just funny.
It's funny. It's a lot of character humour. There's a little bit of nudity in it, and certainly adult themes. But the majority of this first issue is a bit of, you know, it starts off with a group about to have like a bit of a major sexual experience, shall we say.
Let's call it an orgy.
So basically they're streaming it and they're trying to get high sort of ratings. But then it flashes back to how it all started, and they're a group of different scientists. They all have their specialities, but the funding's going nowhere. They don't know, you know, if they have a future and anything. The characters know each other a bit. There's a bit of character development. It's like a pilot for a comedy show, you know. There's so many funny lines in it, but wonderful character moments. But the things that you'll think about most of the time in this book are the obviously the sex humour throughout.
Is that a special space weapon she's got there that buzzes?
Are you talking about when she's on a bed?
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
I think it's something that's readily available.
Okay.
Because when it flashes back, she's
it's a back massager, isn't it?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, with a handy grip. But
jeez.
But that scene starts, and you don't see it. You literally don't see anything. You know, it's just the fact that someone holding. Let's face it, it's a dildo. If you see someone holding a dildo, that's, you know, that's funny in itself. But that scene starts with...
There's just one panel where one bloke's shouting, super massive black hole.
Oh, that's... because when she has this idea, let's use the teleportation device, travel to different worlds, we can experience all of this, and they can use their scientific sort of knowledge as well for different things. Like, one of them is... an expert in sort of biological diseases. So she says, well, you know, you can discover cures just in case we run into anything. And there's a moment of silence until one of them says, supermassive black hole. What? My porn name. Everyone calls me supermassive black hole.
That's a hell of a name.
That is a hell of a name.
You may have not been thinking properly about that.
It's so funny. And the intimate scene earlier, like, it starts with her kicking her cat out of the bedroom. But the cat has, because this is set in the future, the cat has a sort of like mechanical device around its collar and around its head, so it can communicate in some way, obviously. I guess, you know, in that film Up, you know, the dog has that collar that can help it speak.
Talks. Yeah. All
right. But the cat's saying, no, mate, bad. Self, mate, bad. and the cat's really planning revenge, and she says, Jesus, now my cat is judging me too.
One of my favourite bits is they've just done the gangbang with the fish man, and there's the female character who's basically based on Sarah, isn't she? There's a certain similarity. The human is saying, he's trying to get the fish man to give him a high five, and he's saying, a pleasure working the ends with you, Free Willy.
There's at one point she makes they've got like a computer sort of like automated TV, holographic TV, and she says something about comments, and it goes, oh, playing comments now. She goes, no, I didn't actually want an answer. You should never read the comments ever for any reason. Oh shit, I'm reading the comments. And here are the comments. This includes their usernames. YOLO swag, so boring when they won't talk, 2 out of 10. Lord of the Dongs, WTF, they barely fucked the cakes, 2 out of 10. Edgelord of edging, the Godzilla's tits aren't big enough, 3 out of 10.
Fucking hell. One of my favourite lines is, she says, I put something in my mouth I'm not entirely sure was a sex organ.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. I mean,
I'm on board for issue two. I'm going to say that now.
I think if you get past, this is obviously a lot of people. I mean, they should be talking. I'm surprised not more people are talking about it, to be honest, because it's such a, you know, it seems shocking, But it's just well written comics. It really is. It really is comedy. Yeah. It's you know, it's just a grown up comedy. That's, you know, if you've watched things like Zack and Miri Make a Porno or things like that, you'll love this. You'll love this.
It's the old story about sex. It's funny. Have you seen The Faces We Make? Yeah. You know what I mean? Is that? Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. And is that, you know, and you know, the artwork is absolutely amazing. I think Rebecca's work is phenomenal. They're, you know, the science fiction designs as well as
the art reminds me a bit of Amanda Conner. It's that sort of style
to
it.
Yeah. You know? And a lot of the humor that you get is in like the facial expressions and things like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just the way someone will just give a subtle look to someone. So Money Shot, I highly recommend it. Vault Comics. God bless them for doing this.
Awesome.
And I just want to state for the record, I had no idea this existed until I think Dan posted it on our WhatsApp group, didn't he? He said, "Look at this." Was it him? It was just a picture of the cover, and I was like, "Oh, you know, this looks fun."
Oh, you did, Dan? Yeah,
I can't even fucking recall this.
Yeah, yeah, because the cover looks great as well. You know, but it's it was such a pleasure as well. Thinking it goes beyond the joke, you know. Of what the concept is to being, it's going to be interesting. Like a lot of the comics that I've liked in the past, like The Fix and things like that, they're sort of morally ambiguous characters that are hilarious throughout. So I'm looking forward to seeing how things play out. And I hope
like us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you like some of the stuff that we joke about on a, you know, the juvenile sort of humour, this has that as well as more. So I do highly recommend it. And well done, Vault. I think Vault were at Thought Bubble as well.
Yeah, they were doing a portfolio review thing.
Yeah, I will say one thing. And this has nothing to do with the book, but I think they've got like a section for their more grown up comics. I could be wrong about this, but in the back it says Vault Vanguard. They call it.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Vault Vanguard. For me, there's only one Vanguard.
Yeah,
I'm gonna chimp him when we're there. Just for doing that, I'm gonna put in my hand, throw it at them.
I knew you meant pooing in your hand.
I had to make it clear to the listeners. I knew you.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously, my choices this week were a lot of dark character pieces, and I ended on something like that, which
an orgy.
Yeah,
always it's a happy ending. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. Always end sexy. So that was the recommendations. I've got a little.
We've got something new and interesting from you.
Yeah. I'm going to do a bit of reading in a minute. But before we do that, do we have any shout outs this week?
I have. I've just got the one.
Go for it.
Walking Like an Exorcist is live on Kickstarter. It's by Millicent Barnes Comics and our pal Stuart McCune. It's a brand new standalone graphic novel in the Human Beings series. Stuart's a real deal. We all know that. Cracking. Looks hauntingly strange, as is a lot of Stuart's work, but this looks like it's taken another step on. Really good. It's almost there on Kickstarter, as all of his are, but it's well worth getting behind. And you don't need to have read the previous stuff in The Human Beings. You can jump straight on this one. Looks cracking. Okay.
Nice.
What's that shout out of Gav Mitchell?
I was just about to say that. Gav Mitchell has a Kickstarter out at the moment. Pocket Full of Monsters.
That's it, yeah.
Which is an illustrated retrospective. Gav's a fantastic artist. He's doing is it Rum? Oh, what's the Rum Road? Or what? I've murdered that. I know that's got a Kickstarter at the moment.
Okay.
But he's the artist for that, but he's also, this is a little art book. And if you know Monsters in My Pocket, which were a thing in the 80s, was it late 80s, Dan?
Yeah,
I'm not really too au fait with monsters.
No, me neither.
They were basically just tiny little plasticky sort of monsters, different colours. Yeah. You just bought them in a pack and then you collected them. And Gav tells the story on his Kickstarter video, which made me laugh and I kept watching it. It's only a minute long. But definitely check that out. Because it's a great little art book, and Gav's amazing. So it's from the Happy Clam guys. So they will have passed their goal by the time this comes out.
Yeah, I'm sure they will have done.
Yeah. But it looks brilliant. And so that's my one. Does anyone else have any shout outs?
No.
No. I suppose we should just say then, even though we're recording this early, thank you to everyone that came up and talked to us at Thought Bubble.
Yeah.
no matter what table you came up and said hello, you know, whether you follow the show or not, or maybe this is the first time you listen to the show, thank you very much, and we hope you enjoy it.
Hope everyone had a great thought bubble.
We hope you all had a great thought bubble. Hopefully, we managed to get some audio. We're planning
that's
now.
The plan.
Yeah. Mm. So, so there will be a bit of a thought bubble special. If there's enough, it will be a standalone special. It won't be a numbered episode. If we're too busy just being gangsters and we only get like five minutes,
likely,
then we'll put it in the next show. But
cigars ready.
Yeah. So stay tuned to our Twitter feeds, etc., to find out when that's going to happen.
Cool.
Right. Okay. Something a bit different.
Just to wrap the show up.
Something a little bit different, and it was purely because my mate Dan Chan on the WhatsApp, he did an automated story generator recently. This is not comics related, by the way. This is something that just made me laugh that I thought these guys might get out of. he did an automated story generator, and anyone who knows what those are like, they're a bit mental. You know, people like, they do things like automated chapters of Harry Potter, and the computer does it based on.
Oh, yeah, they sort of plug in all the bits and it comes out. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what he plugged into this, but.
Russell Reed's wives.
But you're about to find out. So, this is going to be my, basically my tape for Audible, should you want me to narrate your audiobook.
Edition tape.
Dan's already proved his worth.
Dan's already got. You know, Dan's the master. So I'm just. I think I'm just inspired by Dan, really. So
let's hear it.
Yeah, okay. Go for it.
Ruthless Vince Hunt, a short story by Horatio Bumstabber. I'm gonna have to pause every time they laugh. Right, you ready?
Yeah.
Vince Hunt looked at the damp sausage in his hands and felt angry. He walked over to the window and reflected on his rural surroundings. He had always loved quiet Gillingham with its gentle, giant grass. It was a place that encouraged his tendency to feel angry. Then he saw something in the distance, or rather someone. It was the figure of Ainsley Harriet. Ainsley was a mean deity with greasy lips and slimy elbows. Vince gulped. He glanced at his own reflection. He was a ruthless, vile tea drinker with dirty lips and grubby elbows. His friends saw him as a bad, barbecued bear. Once, he had even helped a comfortable old man recover from a flying accident. But not even a ruthless person who had once helped a comfortable old man recover from a flying accident was prepared for what Ainsley had in store today. The hail pounded like smiling gerbils, making Vince anxious. As Vince stepped outside and Ainsley came closer, he could see the adorable glint in his eye. "I am here because I want affection," Ainsley bellowed in a hungry tone. He slammed his fist against Vince's chest with the force of 9,998 rats.
Does this go into porn? Because it seems
No, it doesn't. Thank God it doesn't. If it did, I wouldn't be reading it. Okay. "I friggin' love you, Vince Hunt." Vince looked back, even more anxious and still fingering the damp sausage. "Ainsley, I can't quit you," he replied. They looked at each other with puzzled feelings, like two pickled plain pigeons laughing at a very callous snowstorm, which had flute music playing in the background and two clumsy uncles shouting to the beat. Suddenly, Ainsley lunged forward and tried to punch Vince in the face. Quickly, Vince grabbed the damp sausage and brought it down on Ainsley's skull. Yeah. Ainsley's greasy lips trembled and his slimy elbows wobbled. He looked cross, his body raw like a round roasted rock. Then he let out an agonizing groan and collapsed onto the ground. Moments later, Ainsley Harriet was dead. Vince Hunt went back inside and made himself a nice cup of tea.
Fucking hell, that was a roller coaster. So what do you put
like
in
there? Sort of a novel written in the 60s under the influence of a lot of psychedelics.
Yeah, I know.
But good, and I like that. Lips. Yeah.
It was, it just
a lot
takes
banging
you all...
sausages.
Yeah. There's lots to go on. There's romance, there's revenge, there's anger, there's passion. There's damp sausages, and for some reason, hail pounding like smiling gerbils.
I won't look at Ainsley in the same way again.
Yeah.
I could have swore I knew where that story was going, but then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about the sausage.
No. I thought it was going into a massive black hole.
No, yeah. Super massive black hole. No, no. See, and that's... So there you go. There was a bit of literature to finish nice. This week's show.
You call it that?
You're not highbrow.
We are highbrow now. We're officially highbrow. So hope you enjoyed that.
Next week I read my diary.
Oh, please do, Tony.
Let's keep a diary over the weekend, Pete. Today I saw a nice man. It's that sort of thing. Let's do a diary.
Is that just going to be it?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to record a diary, a verbal diary, me and you, as we wander around.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we do that?
Yeah, I like that idea. Like that.
Okay. Yeah. Look forward to that.
Yeah.
It probably won't happen.
Probably because we'd be banging chicks and stuff. So, you know, it won't be easy.
Tony Esmond, modern man. Jesus Christ.
It was a joke.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I'd give you space to say that just to make that perfectly clear.
Put in that caveat.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll be banging it.
Yeah. But if you have a problem with anything that we said, whether it be the literature or the attitudes of us, or if you want to know more about some of the comics we talked about this week or all the things that we discussed, because obviously there was some important stuff that we discussed at the start of the show as well. Then you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Also, if there's any avenues of like making comics and things like that that you want to hear about, let us know, because we do cover all aspects of it. I know we did that 6-part series recently, but if there's some sort of part of making comics that you want to know more about, it's probably something we want to know more about as well, because you know, there's lots of stuff we don't know, as you know. Yeah, when
promotions one we get occasionally mentioned, don't we? Yeah. We really must think about that one, I think.
Yeah.
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 I think another one on writing dialogue, because you brought that up, Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting one.
Yeah.
I think about that a lot, that one. You're getting naturalistic dialogue.
Yeah.
So few people manage it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think I write the words good.
Yeah. Well, you just read them all out and they were beautiful. Yeah.
Thanks.
I'll tell you, good dialogue. Greg Rucker, I like his dialogue.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
That just basically hacking it back as much as you can.
Yeah.
That always seems to kind of work for me. Not sure if it always lands, but just use as few words as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, so let us know. So email awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Where we'll be shouting about the latest things that we want to talk about. Or any promotions or anything that we've got, because we're shameless. likewise, if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you were inspired by comics this weekend, whether you're at a convention or maybe you were just reading comics at home, because for all those people who weren't at Thought Bubble, you were no doubt reading loads of amazing comics or making your own amazing comics anyway. If you want to get involved with a fantastic community that talks about that without any hard selling or anything like that, then join the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk. If you don't like Facebook, that's fine. We don't really like Facebook, but that's the page that we actually do look at on Facebook.
Yeah. Let us know what's good to buy as well. Let us know what you bought and enjoyed.
Yeah.
There's not enough of that on there. I like to hear about what's a good thing, what's new out.
Yeah. And likewise, this when this episode goes live, there will be a post. As soon as it goes live, there is a post that goes onto that page. On both of our Facebook pages. So continue the conversation there, which is always good to see, as well as like some people just... Dave Kennedy's always got a great response most weeks.
He's always first, isn't he?
Yeah.
we will have just seen him as well. I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah.
He's bringing a rucksack full of pickled eggs with him.
Oh. Jealous you guys get to meet Dave, because I'd love to meet him.
He's a company man, I spent the night out.
We'll make it happen, Dan.
Next year.
Next year.
You're coming next year, mate. There's no two ways about it. You'll be there. Yeah.
And thank you very much to you all for listening to this episode, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, say something nice. Because we're desperate for attention.
We got a nice one on Podbean from Mr. Cumber this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do genuinely like read the comments, and we appreciate.
No, we do. Yeah, we
every,
like it,
every
yeah.
nice bit of feedback. Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. Nice to know. Likewise, if we get anything wrong, or then let us know as well. But we haven't had that yet.
Do that privately.
Yeah. Do that privately.
We had a massive conference call once. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Emergency talks. Yeah.
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 Sometimes it gets serious.
I must dig that email out again. I like reading that to myself.
Yes, and also, if you listen to us on any other sort of networks, whether it be Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we on, Tony?
Pod Skelly Bob.
Hey! That's another £5.
Yep.
Tom Curry getting in touch. You've got to stop it, man. I'm fucking going into debt.
Yeah. About to mortgage me out.
Yes.
Well, he was good last week.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good episode. Like that one. Yeah. And the outtakes did make me giggle.
Yeah. And we still don't know where Ricky is.
No. That's become a bit of a thing now. People keep saying that to
Ricky
me.
Watch.
Yeah.
That is one of the funniest 5 minutes that I've had all year. when I had to do the proof list, and I was laughing to myself, how sad is
that? I was listening when I listened to it. I went to it. Yeah.
So that was last week's episode. So go check it out, folks. Anyway, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony,
Ezo, yes, EZOHYZ, neveronanything.blogspot.com or neveronanything.bigcartel.com if you want to buy one of my comics. There you go.
Nice, Dan.
Oh, and I tell you, the Spark is out. Forgot to mention it.
Oh,
go to Little Heroes, Fair Spark Books. Find them on Twitter. Go and buy the Spark. The back page is me and Vince.
Hey,
Monster Spotters Club, and there's a host of good stuff. Rob Barnes has killed it, as has Dan Harris in there. There's some great stuff in there.
Yeah,
go and get it. Yeah.
Speaking of killer stuff, Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I've been redoing my Patreon this week. I put on a really stupid, I don't know if it's stupid, an upper tier of $40 a month, and you get a full commission every month.
Oh, okay.
And that. So if you wanted a comic, 12-page comic drawn, albeit slowly, you could back it for a year.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout.
Yeah, page
that's
a month.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout, is it? Yeah. All right, we'll have to think about that.
$40, that's a steal.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JesterDiablo. Well, I'll probably be posting up a bit more artwork and a bit more work in progress for what I'm going to be doing next year.
Plus, yes. Sketching at your table, by the way? Was that your plan?
No, I wasn't sketching at my table this weekend.
Right, okay, right, fine.
Yeah. That was why all my commissions were pre-show commissions.
Yeah. We're looking forward to chatting, man. We're going to be mucking about anyway.
I know. We hopefully, as this is released, we've still got our voices.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And our pubes.
What?
Unlikely.
Yeah.
What do you mean, unlikely?
Unlikely. It burned off through friction.
landing strip hunt. That's what they call him.
Jesus.
Jesus.
Where's they call Tony?
Bombshell.
A bustle in the hedgerow. That's what they call him.
Look at you with your 1973 rock reference.
Thank you. anyway, thank you very much for listening, everyone. Tune in next week when normal service will resume. We'll probably have a guest. Who knows?
Yeah.
Or in the next couple of days, there may be a Thought Bubble special. So keep your eyes open. Yeah. But until then, go forth, read loads of comics, have a brilliant week, stay safe. And as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.